Hey everybody, welcome back to Smart Mouth. This is your host Catherine with a little advertisement before we get into today's episode. There is a online furniture store called Jungalow. That's like bungalow, but with a J, like a jungle bungalow. Jungalow, you get it. I like all the stuff there, and I also like the way that the store operates in kind of a people first philosophy. It's a store with a mission to encourage people to like create a home, their surroundings that make them feel happy and healthy and also inspired. And luckily enough, all the stuff at the store is really cute. I even saw that Crystal, who hosts one of my favorite podcasts, The Read, posted about buying one of the chairs that they have over at shop.jungalow.com, which also sells lighting and other furniture and art prints and lifestyle goods, you know, little trays, cute little things. I personally have my eye on the Cosmic Desert wallpaper. I just have never been able to decide if I wanted an ivory or in teal. But I think I'm going to make my decision soon because Jungalow has partnered with this podcast, Smart Mouth, and is offering listeners 15% off your order when you use the code SMARTMOUTH when you check out. And that code is SMARTMOUTH, all one word, all in caps, like you're yelling it and you're really excited about it, which you are because it gives you 15% off. So just go to shop.jungalow.com. And again, Jungalow is spelled J-U-N-G-A-L-O-W, shop.jungalow.com. Pick out some cute stuff, enter code SMARTMOUTH, get your 15% off, and then enjoy your new furnishings. And now, on to the show. Welcome to another week of Smart Mouth. I'm your host, Catherine Spires, and this week our guest is not from the food world, although she loves food.
I do.
Olivia Smoliga. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You are a person who like has to wake up really early all the time, so yeah. I appreciate that you took time out of your day being...
Oh, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. You're a world-class athlete. I get to call you that, right? That's accurate? Okay,
yeah.
Gosh.
Gas me up. Yeah. So tell me more. What else do you like?
You've won all kinds of awards and medals for your swimming abilities.
Yes.
So here's something that I have some questions about swimming for
sure.
Every time I read about your gold medal in the last Olympics, last Summer Olympics, it's like, based on your swim in the preliminaries. What does that mean,
it's kind of confusing. Yeah. No, absolutely. So here it goes. At the Olympics, for relays, they take up to 8 people to rest people for the final heat that make the medal stand, essentially. My time individually qualified me to swim for the preliminary heat, but somebody else swam in the final heat. So it's like all of us as a group of 8 got a medal.
We all...
I guess technically, you know, contributed to it.
Right, okay.
So I always say that I got a gold medal by default, not individually, but it was like an amazing experience, you know, and it just makes me hungrier for the next games.
Yeah.
But it is cool. It is cool. It's like we swim in the morning and then the final heat swims at night. And once they touched the wall and got gold, like everyone turned around and was like, you're a gold medalist.
Oh, that's
so
exciting.
So that's kind of how it works. Yeah, it's... kind of, yeah, got it by default a little
bit. Well, you know what? Just take it, though.
I made the team. So, yeah, I'll take it.
Most people don't get any kind of gold medal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that is true.
So it's really cool. Yeah. And so you're going to, how far ahead do people know if they make the next Olympic team?
You qualify roughly 2 months before the Olympics. Our trials will be in June of 2020.
Okay.
And then the Olympics will be August of 2020.
So that's a long ways away.
A long ways away.
And you just have to like, do you swim every day?
I do. Sometimes twice a day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Do you say just keep swimming to yourself?
Always. And like halfway in the set, I'll be like, we're halfway there. Yeah. It's tough. It's monotonous, but it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You must really love it.
I do love
it. To commit to it like this.
Yeah. I haven't washed my hair in like 4 days.
I don't wash or brush my hair either.
It makes it stronger. We both have such thick hair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Great.
We get it. I also realized reading about swimming that I don't actually know what freestyle is.
a lot of people think freestyle like it is in dancing, like you could do whatever you want.
Right, but it can't be that.
It can't be that. It couldn't possibly be that, right? Yeah. Freestyle, you're on your stomach, and you guys can't see right now, but I'm motioning to Catherine it goes.
Motioning forward.
Right.
With your arms.
With our arms, yes.
Okay, so on your
breathe
stomach.
To the side.
Okay. Yeah. I thought that was the breaststroke, but that's...
Breaststroke, you kind of look like a frog when you're swimming.
Oh,
so it's like this.
I see.
It's like the Sunday strolls, the old ladies in the side pool of the rec swimming, YMCA. Okay. Yeah.
Is that an Olympic event too, though?
It is an Olympic event.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I learned so much. This is exciting. So I think it's really funny, as per usual, we do the sound check NPR style, which is asking people what they ate for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And you're such an athlete.
I know.
So
I'm
healthy all the time.
I'm on break. So I get back into training next week, but I had a chocolate chip muffin from Starbucks.
Starbucks breakfasts are going to be the death of all of us.
I know.
Think we all do it.
We all do it.
And it's not good.
It's a shame. And it's like frozen.
Yeah.
They heat them up in the oven.
You know, this is funny. Some friends and I were talking recently about how Egg McMuffins from McDonald's might technically be better for you and the environment and society than the Starbucks breakfast sandwiches, because at McDonald's they actually like cook them or assemble them there.
Yes, it's a fresh egg.
Yeah,
I think they cook it. For each Egg McMuffin, they cook an egg.
Right.
My dad read in Men's Health magazine. Mm-hmm. He like came home. He was so proud. Put the magazine on the table. He's like, Egg McMuffins are healthy. I'm like, Dad, yeah, that might be true, but stop eating Filet-O-Fish with sweet and sour sauce, all right?
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Filet-O-Fish with sweet and sour.
It's sweet and salty.
Yeah.
You know, it's it brightens the palate, if you will.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, but I guess it is healthier than the Starbucks breakfast.
Yeah. Or at least like not shipped in pre-made and then microwaved.
Yeah.
Which all that stuff like is kind of gross to think about your food.
It is, yeah.
But you like really went for it. Chocolate chip muffin. You were like, what's the biggest, least nutritious calorie bomb in this whole place?
Right. I mean, right. Yeah. I mean, if you put it like that, I feel really good about myself now. Yeah. I was actually joking when I went to Nationals in July. So that was our qualifying for the Pan Pacific Championships.
Okay.
There's a different championship every year.
Got it.
Rotates. And before our final session, I got a donut from Starbucks. Got shit from a whole entire team. But I was like, this donut is essentially like a Chewy bar or a Clif bar. You know, it has the same sugar content or whatever. Perhaps I was just making myself feel better about the choice.
No, I think you're right, because if you actually look at the nutrition information on these like power bars and what have you, they're just candy bars.
They're just candy bars.
Yeah.
It's like eating a Snickers.
Yeah, exactly. So why not?
Right. I'm ahead of the game.
Yeah, you are. You're truly a visionary.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
So both of your parents are Polish, right?
They are.
Okay, so it's interesting that you said that he likes the sweet and sour sauce, because what I've been learning studying the food that you mentioned is like sour is a big Eastern European flavor profile.
It is. Yes.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. A lot of sour foods, like in Polish, it's called kapusta, which is cabbage, like sauerkraut, right? Is that right? A lot of, and barszcz.
Is that how you pronounce it? Barszcz?
I say barszcz.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And there's a lot of sour profile. I mean, yeah, I could go on, I guess. But I think cabbage is like the main like sour thing that you can eat.
A lot of cabbage stuff.
A lot of cabbage stuff. Great smell. Really terrible smell.
But like eating it makes it worth it?
It does make it worth it.
Okay.
And I feel like cabbage has like a natural probiotic too in it.
Very true.
Right?
Yeah. And then once you ferment things, you're just like eating so healthfully.
Yeah.
That it's beautiful. Okay. Right. So I pronounce your favorite food or your favorite dish that your mom cooks you as borscht.
Borscht.
Which I, you know, that's a West Coast thing. I have learned that sometimes my vowels are different than how a lot of people say things. And I think it's because I've lived on the West Coast my whole life.
Well, I'm from Chicago. Mm-hmm. So when I would say like a cap and goggles that you put on, right? I'd be like cap, goggles, like so embarrassing. And I, yeah, had to change up my accent. I told myself I would never say y'all when I moved down to Georgia, and I'd say it all the time now too.
I think everyone says y'all. I say y'all.
It's easier.
Yeah,
you exactly. guys is hard.
Yeah, 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 it's quicker.
Quicker
for sure. But you didn't adopt a Southern accent at all, though.
No,
you went fully mainstream.
Fully mainstream. I can do a good Southern accent, but yeah. How y'all doing? Howdy.
Because you are fully ensconced in Georgia now, right?
Yes.
You went to college there, and now you...
I went to, yeah, University of Georgia, graduated in May.
Oh, that recently.
Yeah, that recently. Happy. For a fifth year. So I did school for a while, so...
Well, still, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank
That's
you
fun.
So much.
On
Thank
to
you.
The, on to the next thing.
On to the next new chapter of life.
Yeah. So I have another athlete question before we move on to borscht, which... and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but, like, you have to eat a ton, right?
Yes.
Is there, like, a calorie count that you have to meet?
It depends. I mean, I just eat if I'm hungry.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes after a practice, you build up lactic acid after you work out. So it is kind of uncomfortable to eat afterwards. Sometimes you have to force yourself to just get the necessary carbs and proteins in. But I do eat a lot. Yeah, I'm up at 5 in the morning, eat breakfast, swim from 5:30 to 7, lift weights, eat, practice in the afternoon. At like 3 p.m. and eat again, and I'll eat like 8 times a day.
I mean, that's really active.
It is active.
So yeah, it's kind of what I imagine like calorie counts are actually based on, like not being a swimmer, but like working in a field or something like that.
Hard labor.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is. Yeah.
So what do you mean by the lactic acid makes it unpleasant to eat sometimes?
So after a hard workout, your muscles release like this lactic acid and it'll stay kind of trapped in your stomach because all the blood is like going to your muscles. So, science.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
it'll just be in your stomach, I guess, for like an hour, maybe hour and a half after workout. So you have no appetite. So it kind of is like eating a smoothie or drinking a smoothie would be like, you know, something that you'd want to eat after a workout just to get the, just to refuel your muscles, I guess.
So eating isn't always a pleasure for you, right? Even for someone like you who like demonstrably is into food. Every interview I've seen of you has you talking about food.
Really?
It's kind of incredible.
That's great. Thank you. That's my brand.
But, yeah, totally. But sometimes it must just be purely fuel, right?
Yeah, purely fuel. Yeah, sometimes it's like very black and white. You just got to get whatever, right? Brown rice, grilled chicken and...
Yeah.
Vegetables.
Interesting.
Stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. That's just so different from how most Americans and probably most people around the world eat now.
Yeah. I'm just used to being around athletes, so I feel like it's the norm. And so when I go around normal people, you know, or whatever, it's just different. Yeah.
A few years ago, Michael Phelps's daily diet was in all the newspapers and stuff. Were you guys like, yeah, obviously?
Or... Yeah, obviously. He is like a specimen, though.
Okay.
As I'm sure... Everyone knows, you know, he was like 8,000 to 10,000 calories.
You don't think you get up to that?
I don't think I do. Maybe like 5 to 6.
Okay.
And really hard training.
Got it.
I'll eat that much. Yeah. But he would like down 2 pepperoni pizzas at a time. They'd probably fold them in half and just like slide in the mouth.
I just realized, I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier. That's expensive too, to have to eat that much.
Yeah. Yeah, like where's our money to support ourselves here?
No. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Do you make money by winning? Is that how it works?
Yes. The way that swimmers make money in the States, we work with USA Swimming and the USOC, which is the United States Olympic Committee, and USA Swimming, which is just this huge like overlying like company, and we get monthly payments, I guess. But you have to let USA Swimming know what you're doing so that you do get paid. So you have to like let them know that you're training.
Oh, I see.
Let them know that you're lifting weights, traveling for meets and all that stuff. But yeah, we have a couple meets sprinkled in throughout the year and we get paid for top 3. Yeah.
So you're salaried and then you will basically like win bonuses essentially
yeah.
from, and those checks will be cut from different organizations, right?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
And yeah, when you go to big meets like the Pan Pacific Championships I had mentioned, World Championships, and the Olympics, based off whatever medal money you get, you get something from USA Swimming along with the USOC and another company or another organization called FINA.
Okay.
Which is like the world swimming brand, a world swimming company. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you have to make enough to live off of because it seems like you literally wouldn't have enough time to have another job.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Yeah, people always ask me. I'm like, yeah, I graduated and I swim. Mm-hmm. They're like, so when are you going to get a job? And I was like, dude,
yeah,
it's tough. I mean, yeah, I mean, I live alone, live by myself. I have no one else to support. Mm-hmm. So it is pretty simple living.
Yeah.
You just eat, sleep, swim type right. of thing. And it's fine for now. You know, I'll keep going as long as I can.
Yeah,
I guess.
Now is the time to do it, obviously.
Right? Yeah, I'm young and
yeah,
sprightly. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you know how your mom makes her borscht? Like, do you know what ingredients are key in it?
Oh, my God. No.
Okay.
I do not. Beets.
Beets, definitely. And red beets specifically?
Red beets specifically. And it'll be like a 24-hour plus ordeal.
Okay.
And spices that I probably have. No, it's special spice blends.
Uh-huh.
Like lemon or add acid to okay. it as well. And water.
Is there any meat in it?
No meat.
Interesting.
It is just purely a broth.
Okay.
Like, it's very thin.
Very thin.
Very thin. But what we do during holidays,
mm-hmm.
Christmas specifically, is we'll put, they're called ushka, mm-hmm. which literally mean ears in
okay.
English.
Uh-huh.
And they're kind of like mini pierogi.
Mm-hmm.
And they're stuffed with like either mushrooms or onions or meat or anything like that. And you put them in a bowl and you pour the borscht over it.
Okay.
And so it's like this soup with like croutons, if you will, type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, dumplings mm-hmm. type of thing.
Like kind of a, I guess like minestrone, the kinds that use pasta.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Like a chicken noodles. Yeah, uh-huh. type of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, but it's a broth and it's so good for you. And beets are so good for everyone in general, athletes specifically, because they cleanse your like blood vessels, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
It's very cleansing. So whenever I would be sick or anything, my mom mm-hmm. would always make me borscht and bring it to me. And yeah, it turns your pee kind of pink.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I know that lots of people, it's probably literally watered down and borscht, but there's that trope about people thinking they're dying and then realizing that they just ate beets 12 hours before.
I was at a meet and I went to Whole Foods and I just got a ton of beets on the side because of their health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
I went to pee and I was like, oh my God, I have blood in my urine, like I'm so sick. And then my roommate was like, dude, you had beets for lunch, like chill out.
I wonder how many ambulances have been called.
Because people are freaked out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably someone should track that.
I know.
That's because I know literally people who have done that before. So everyone just needs to take a beat.
Take a beat.
A beat.
She's so funny. She's got jokes.
Okay. So borscht probably is Ukrainian, like in its initial form.
Sure.
And then, of course, it's spread. And it seems like it's also one of those things, even in Ukraine, where just like different families will have different ways of making it, and mm-hmm. everyone insists that that's the correct way of doing it. But researching it, there's so many different varieties that I kind of wonder if, in just the way the word is used now, if borscht kind of just means soup. Yeah. It means something more specifically than that, but just like in the common nomenclature, if it just kind of means like a sort of soury, tart-ish soup.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's funny that you say the different like variances all around probably Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Like my aunt even has a different version than my mom does.
Oh, really?
And it's like every time holidays come around, it's like one day at my aunt's house, one day at my mom's house, and it's like...
Oh, interesting.
But my mom's tastes better. Mom, if you're listening, yours tastes great. Yeah.
Can you appreciate your aunt's, or is it like it has to be done the way my mom did?
I appreciate my aunt's. My aunt is a fantastic cook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's brilliant. So, both of them have good recipes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do a little difference. It's one of those things, though, like my mom's spaghetti.
Yeah.
Even though I don't necessarily think it's like the best on the planet, I'm like, that's the kind I want.
That's it. Yeah. Nobody else makes it that way.
Yeah. Why would I eat it if my mom didn't make it?
They add a certain love and tenderness to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Tilda's getting worked up because we're talking about.
She's hungry too.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't know if she wants borscht. She doesn't want your mom's kind because there's no meat in it.
Right.
So she finds that boring.
Sorry.
So just to like elaborate on how many different versions there are. This is like something that I kept coming across. It really caused a sensation. Mm-hmm. So there's a Russian language online forum called Love Talk.
Okay.
But apparently it's not like a dating forum. It's just like an everything
okay.
forum. And in 2004, someone started a thread with the title, "What is borscht? Does it have to contain beetroot?" And it seems like people really went nuts in the responses.
What'd they say?
Okay. So people claimed all kinds of ingredients that were absolutely necessary for it to be called all borscht.
Right, let me hear it.
Vinegar, green onions, pickled apples or dried apples, plums, cherries, eggplant,
really?
Olives. Some people say you have to put flour in it. Oh, prunes. Herbs included mint, tarragon, paprika, dill, oregano, basil. Some people said you had to have sugar. Different meats.
Wow.
Beef bone marrow, sausage, ham.
Wow. No. That's not how my mom makes it. The only like meat result is a bouillon cube, right? Is mm-hmm. that what it's how you pronounce
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what she'll put in. I think she'll put in a couple of those.
Okay. The chicken kind?
The chicken kind.
Okay.
Yes.
But no, like hunks
no,
of meat.
No, the eggplant is like throwing me off.
Yeah, for
prunes,
sure.
All of that. There's tangent. There's something that my mom also makes around the holiday season. It's called compote, mm-hmm. which is like a cider. And she'll add like all different kinds of things. It's totally unrelated. But
Polish food, but Polish yeah, food, yeah. Tell us everything.
Wow, I'm gonna need to ask my mom like what she puts in, because I'm like surprised at that.
Yeah, I know yeah. so many variations. This is why I'm starting to think I'm like it's just soup.
Yeah, it's just soup. Whatever like, you want, throw in it.
Not to denigrate anybody's traditions, but it seems like it's almost not a tradition at this point.
Yeah, now that you say it,
especially yeah. because apparently, okay, part of the reason why it's classified as Ukrainian food specifically. Yeah. Is because the original version of it didn't have beets, like mm-hmm. the sweet red to pink to white roots that yeah. we think of.
Yeah.
It had the leaves of a plant that we call the common hogweed.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically an herb. If you look at it, it kind of looks like dandelion leaves.
Okay.
So it can be used like it's a very bitter salad green.
Yeah.
And but they would usually pickle it and then make it into a soup. So it wasn't red.
Yeah.
It was this like greenish whitish
color. And this
was
the original way of making
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like way back. Yeah.
Wow. So we really kind of messed it up, didn't we?
It just took some twists and turns.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. Right.
So, oh, and the connection also yes. Is there's a book called The Wild Edible Plants of Poland.
Mm.
So moving over to Poland.
Sure.
The word borscht comes from a Slavic word, borshevik, which is the word for hogweed.
Interesting.
So that,
I'm learning so much.
Oh, good.
This is yeah, yeah.
So that is apparently the connection. And the guy who wrote the book says that it used to be really important to Slavic cooking, hogweed, that is, and that you just use the leaves and the stalks. And he called it the soup that you make from it a survival dish.
Survival dish,
which is what so many classic dishes started as.
Yeah, it's like the peasant dish, yeah. right? It's like the meat and potatoes, and mm-hmm. yeah, right.
Just like as basic as possible. And using all the weird parts of the animal and all that
yeah.
stuff.
It's, and making sure nothing goes to waste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the recipes that I came across for borscht very specifically called for oxtail.
Wow, I really need to brush up on my history of borscht because I really feel unprepared. Yeah. What my mom does add is bay leaf. Like, that's,
okay.
So that's, mm-hmm. I don't know if...
That's
dandelion leaf, bay. I know they're not the same, but perhaps like a variation of, you know.
I think bay leaves are often used to like sort of smooth out the flavors, round them out.
Okay.
So I think it's a different flavor profile. Having yeah. said that, I've never actually eaten hogweed.
Yeah, me
so
neither.
So maybe I don't know.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah.
Until just now.
And then there's other medieval-ish accounts of what to do with the hogweed is they actually fermented it.
Okay.
So a lot like sauerkraut.
Yeah, yeah, a lot like sauerkraut.
And fermenting is not only incredibly healthy, but always a good way of preserving food
yeah,
as well.
Yes.
So it does both.
All right.
So... For whatever reason, maybe because beets are a little bit sweet and humans just love sweet tasting things.
I love sweet tasting things. Anything that I have the biggest sweet tooth in the world.
Got it.
If the borscht is like really sour. Mm-hmm. I love to add sugar into it, which is probably that's like funny. Really messing it up. But I love it. I love the sweetness of it.
Well, apparently some people say that you have to add sugar to it. So it's fine.
And I wonder too, like with golden beets, mm-hmm. if it had ever been done, because I feel like golden beets had a different.
I think they're sweeter than red beets,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it seems like that would be kind of a pretty color for a soup as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're onto something.
Yes. So the idea is that it's just, I mean, I came across the idea and then also read it. A diverse array of tart soups can be called borscht. And for whatever reason, you know, the color of the red is pretty remarkable. So it's kind of a showstopper. So I can see using it to sort of impress your guests or your family.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, there isn't any other soup, like, because you'll get like whatever chicken noodle soups, plain clear broth or whatever. I mean, French onion soup, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a brown color, so that's always fun. When you can have a non-beige food, that's always...
Yeah, in like love European the color.
Yeah, right, it's so rare to come across that.
Very rare, very rare.
So there were some different recipes over time that I thought were interesting. There was... borscht was made for a czar of Russia in the early 19th century, and because he's a czar, they had to really do it up three different stocks.
Okay.
A veal stock... a goose stock, and another of mushrooms, specifically morels. So that's clearly like...
I love mushrooms.
That's not a struggle food.
No.
Mushrooms are good.
I really love mushrooms. Yeah, mushrooms are pretty prevalent, I think, in Eastern European food. How I was mentioning the ushka, right, with the that are stuffed with mushrooms in them, too. There's a... And also, I'm blanking on the name, but they're like a pastry, a savory pastry, and they're stuffed with like... cream of mushroom, right?
Okay.
Cream of mushroom and mushrooms and like heavy cream, and it's inside. It's delicious.
That
like
this does flaky sound good.
Pastry. It's so good. And I really am missing out on going to a Polish deli.
Yeah.
Because the Polish, like, I guess presence or population is so prevalent in Chicago.
Yeah.
When I went down to Georgia, I mean, we had a Polish deli like every other block.
Yeah.
You know, it's so nice and made me really feel like home, but in Georgia, no such thing. But I love, you know, fried chicken and biscuits and gravy. Had never had it until I moved to Georgia 5 years ago. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a big different culinary cultures. Those two cities or huge areas.
Yeah. Huge change.
Interesting. Huge change.
Waffle House. Right? Chick-fil-A. Like, yeah.
That's, I wonder if you had grown up eating those foods, if you would be the athlete that you are today.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like kind of reflecting on the past couple years, you know, like my diet and stuff like that. And just really, because it's hard to keep up. You know, sometimes when you're tired, you don't want to cook after practice. You just want to order out like all the time. And I mean, I got so lucky growing up in high school. My mom would always make sure I was so well fed, and it's like super easy that way. And everything was so nutritious. So
that's cool.
If I had grown up just like smashing Chick-fil-A every meal, probably wouldn't be here. Probably wouldn't be the same.
Right. Yeah. Or you wouldn't. Yeah. You wouldn't be getting the same times at least or something.
No.
You're probably like innately athletic, but it's nature and nurture.
It is nature and nurture. It is. Gotta cut down on the fries and the milkshakes.
Or just like retire early and be like, and now I just eat fries.
Now I just eat fries. That's anyone want to work with me? Yeah.
So let's see. What did they add to this three stock borscht?
Yeah.
Dried prunes.
Which is what you had mentioned.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then sour cherries.
Okay.
And I guess now that's really moved onto tomatoes. So you get the sour flavor from the cherries, like an acidic element. And now people use tomatoes, but those didn't come to Eastern Europe until relatively recently.
Yeah. And the cherries and prunes, I'm sure, maybe add to the color as well. I mean, similar to maybe beets too.
Totally. Maybe. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Oh, and then here's the oxtail one.
Yeah.
With diced onions, julienned carrots. And then in the summer, you would use fresh tomatoes. Okay. But in the winter, you would use fermented tomatoes.
Interesting.
Eastern Europeans can't stop fermenting things.
Yeah, damn. Like, what's up with you guys?
And then, this was a funny little anecdote. A guy who wrote about borscht for The New Yorker, he said that his grandmother, who was Ukrainian, was like, why would you use red beets? It turns everything this blood color.
No way. So what did it say that she used?
So there's a variety of beets that grows in southern Ukraine that I guess is like a light tan color.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't like a turnip or something, like a light tan.
More like a turnip. You know, it's so interesting when we think about vegetables now in America, probably in a lot of the world, we think about what we get at grocery stores now. But those are the crops or the varieties that are specifically like can sit the longest and grow the biggest.
Genetically
and the most,
modified to and the most have uniform. Shelf life.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But there's like a wide variety of vegetables that we never see. I think one that might be semi-familiar to people is carrots, because at farmers markets, you can see that there's carrots actually come in every color.
Yeah, I just had purple carrots the other day. I went to what was it called? It was, oh my gosh, I don't remember. Anyway, I had a swordfish and it had purple carrots, regular carrots, and like this basil puree. It was delicious.
Yum.
But yeah, I took a class, like a health psychology class. I was a psychology major, and I learned so much just about food and how it affects behavior and mood and just early studies of that, because nutrition hasn't really been delved into on the psychology side. But yeah, even like blue corn, for example, or like the healthiest part and how it had changed, you know, yellow corn, white corn, and just how mass produced it is loses its nutritional value.
Right.
But yeah, it is really interesting to get that, you know, fresh
to just first, to see. Yeah.
First seeds or whatever.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. The heritage seeds and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Eggplants too. If you go to a farmer's market, eggplants.
What colors?
Green.
Okay.
White.
Yeah. White. I think I've seen white eggplant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They actually look like eggs.
I love eggplant.
Really?
So much. Yeah.
Well, you can incorporate eggplant into your borscht.
I guess I will. I won't tell my mom though.
Yeah. What? How do you, what's your favorite like preparation for eggplant?
For eggplant. So last summer I went to Italy and there was like this charity meet going on after our world championships. And I had eggplant parm probably every meal from different restaurants just to see like how they were prepared differently.
You gotta compare and contrast.
You gotta compare and contrast. So I love that, obviously, because cheese.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And another way that I love that just eggplant is a part of is green curry, which I had mentioned to you in an email. Yeah.
Another one of your favorites. Thai
and
curry.
Thai curry. Yeah. Spicy Thai green curry, and it has eggplant in it. And it's just like the sweetest, most beautiful tasting eggplant ever. And I don't know how they cook it or what kind of eggplant they use, but it is like it's like a fluorescent purple. It's like such a bright purple. And I don't know if it's because it's had been cooking or whatever, and like that's the color it you know gets when it boils. But yeah, anyway, it's just like, it's great.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
That does sound really good.
Like I said, sweet stuff.
Yeah, sweet vegetables.
Sweet vegetables.
Jam.
My jam. Yeah.
Do you feel like Polish food ever has like spiciness, like heat to it?
No. That's the one thing I think Polish food misses.
Yeah.
Oh, well, one thing, horseradish.
Oh, okay.
Is huge. Yeah, it's called chrzan.
Okay.
And I love horseradish. I mean, you'd like wasabi, right?
Mm-hmm.
You eat it, opens up your sinuses and stuff. Yeah, but it's delicious. I love horseradish. That's probably the main spice that we have.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of used as only a condiment and never fully incorporated into dish.
Yeah.
There was the same Ukrainian recipe with the oxtail and the tan beets is that they wouldn't mix hot chilies into it, but in between bites of the soup there was this like garnish, separate garnish of green onions and red chilies.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that I mean it adds such a different profile to it.
Totally.
You know, it's because it is pretty plain. Spices. Yeah, I mean the one thing that my mom sometimes will add is sour cream to barsh, so it gives it this really like beautiful pink color.
Yes,
it like brightens up. But yeah, no really spices.
She add it herself, or is that added at the table by each?
Added at the table.
Okay. So everyone can
you take a teaspoon of it and you just mix it into your soup.
Only a teaspoon? If you,
yeah. Only maybe like a two, like a tablespoon. Like a quarter cup? Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to be modest.
Well, it's interesting because of there's so many Jewish people in Eastern Europe, and borscht isn't necessarily a Jewish dish.
Yeah.
But a lot of the different versions of it are Jewish, like specifically, yeah. Actually, not using meat in yours, and you just said Christmas, so I know that's not why.
Right.
But the sour cream might have been, the sour cream and the vegetarian version of borscht kind of go hand in hand because
yeah.
Jews can't eat meat and dairy together.
Yeah.
So make the soup vegetarian and then you can add some delicious sour cream to
it. And you add a little bit more calorie into it too, yeah, right?
Exactly.
A little bit of fat, which is good.
Totally. Just so many different ways of getting those calories and fat in there.
Yeah. Because it's such a healthy dish.
Right.
You know, so you really can just gas it up with sour cream or maybe throw bacon in there or something like that. Right. I don't know. I just really want bacon, I guess.
That's understandable.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm glad you respect that.
Yeah. And then there's the pork version, but again, also a lot of the beef version. And I feel like my mom made borscht sometimes, and this was in Seattle, so it's northern, so there's like a fairly Eastern European background there. And I feel like it was always beef, and I wonder if that's because there's so many Jews eating and making it, that like it just switched over to beef instead of pork. Over.
Yeah, yeah. Could maybe. Be, yes, maybe.
Totally
yes.
Made that up, but why not?
No, I agree. That's facts.
And some people add liquor to it as well.
What kind?
Kvass?
Huh, never had it.
You could try it. Just douse it up a little bit. Right, add some in there.
Polish people are known for their liquor intake.
Yeah,
vodka.
Yeah.
All that. My dad makes a really good liquor recipe. It's called spiritus, which is like the grain alcohol. Like you literally get a bottle of vodka and has a full grain in it. It's like 100%. Yeah, it's 100%. It's like
fully
Everclear,
alcoholic.
Right?
Yeah,
fully
yeah.
alcoholic. And do you want to hear it? Do you want to hear the recipe? Okay. So you get a pound of sugar. You get 12 like with sugar, right?
Yeah.
You get a pound of sugar, like a dozen or more lemons, and this grain alcohol and water.
Okay.
And you have this huge jug and it ferments for, for 3 months. And I guess basically the way you do, you peel all of the lemons, you slice them up, and you kind of layer them in a jug. It's pretty layer. So you use circle layer. Sugar, a layer of lemon sugar, et cetera. Pour the spiritus over it. Water if you need to dilute it, which my dad never does. And over the course of 3 months, and you put all the lemon peels on top to give it color.
Oh, okay.
And flavor, obviously. After a month, you take the lemon peels out. After another month, you know, you keep stirring it, I guess. And by the end of 3 months, it turns this brown color. And it's a little bit thicker. And you can just drink one shot of it and you're feeling it.
You're done.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever mix it with anything?
No, you can really just drink a shot of it and it's, or you can chew on the rinds of the lemons, which my mom loves to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, but it's good. And he told me he would give me the recipe when I turned 21 and I haven't seen shit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it sounds like you have it memorized.
Yeah, I don't know what. I mean, I've just seen him do it so many times, but I want the secrets, you know? I want the secrets of the borscht and I want the secrets of the spiritus, you know?
It's always, I mean, they have to be passed down.
Yeah.
Right?
Generation to generation. What's up? Like, how old do I have to get?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they just think I'm too immature still. I'm still a kid. Yeah.
Funny that you should mention vodka, because there was this food historian in Soviet Russia. His name was William Poklebin.
Okay.
I'm probably butchering that. But
sounds good.
Yeah. So he wrote a book called The History of Vodka, and his argument basically was that vodka was just as much Russian as it was Polish. Previously, it had been considered just a Polish thing.
I always considered it Russian, like Stolichnaya, right?
Uh-huh.
Is the I always thought that was the first. I feel like we just like to claim it, though.
Yeah, because it's a fun thing to claim.
Right.
Who wouldn't want to?
Who wouldn't want to claim vodka?
So they had been paying these import taxes, even though it was the USSR, from Poland to bring in vodka. But the government, because it suited them, decided that since this one book had said that vodka was Russian, they didn't have to pay the import taxes on it anymore. So clearly he was a huge nationalist.
Yeah.
Who great. Like wanted the government on his side. However, yeah. even he, in another book he wrote, The Cuisine of Our Peoples, meaning mm-hmm. the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
He said that borscht was Ukrainian and not Russian.
Okay.
So I guess yeah. even like the reddest reddest Russians.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't want the red borscht. Yeah.
yeah. They still had to admit.
Right. Right.
And there's different, like I mentioned Jewish people, and people say that like in Polish Jews didn't consider it as much like an entire meal as the way that Gentile Poles did.
A borscht as an
yeah,
entire meal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't consider it. I think it's an appetizer.
Yeah. And yeah. the way your mom makes it, it like isn't hefty.
It's not hefty. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like a broth, how I said it's, you could just drink it out of a mug is sometimes mm-hmm. what I'll do, you mm-hmm. know? And it's, yeah, it's not really hefty at all or hearty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
but we don't add, like you said, we don't add much to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it's in America. Are you familiar with the term borscht belt?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So it was the term that was used to describe, it was basically the Catskills okay. in New York. Yeah. And the borscht belt is like where all the Jews went on vacation.
Uh-huh.
It was a very small area.
Yeah.
I think it started in the 30s when people started getting real anti-Semitic oof. In America.
Nice.
So they weren't necessarily allowed in all the hotels. So they're like, okay, yeah. well, this is where we'll go, where we're all welcome. And borscht yeah. belt humor is the very like hokey, jokey humor.
Yeah.
So I guess like... a big part of borscht belt comedy was like making fun of Jewish stuff. It was very like in
how nice
tribe.
Of us. But yeah, like, so great. Oh my god!
Like we're here so we can talk about it. And like the food was a big part of it, making fun of Jewish food, and yeah. they did make fun of borscht. So basically,
shame.
It seems
none for them. Then. Yeah. Y'all don't get to eat it.
yeah, it seems like everybody, every like subgroup from Eastern Europe and Russia claims it at one point or another.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great dish, but. I don't know. I don't know why I always associated with Polish, but now that it's Ukrainian, I guess.
Well, yeah. it makes sense that you yeah. would because your parents are from Poland.
From Poland,
right?
Yep. Fresh off the boat.
And that's who makes it for you.
Yeah.
And it's not so far off base.
Yeah.
It's
like a crop. It's, yeah. Right next door.
Yeah. Is it right next door?
I'm terrible at geography.
Okay.
I was just joking around with someone because we have Short Course Worlds in China in December.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to go to Poland because my dad's always wanted me to go.
You haven't been?
I have never been to okay. Poland. I was like, yeah, it's right there. It's like right. It's on the map. If you look, it's like, it looks like it's really close. It's like a 13-hour flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're not a geography major?
No, I'm not. Yeah. So long story short.
Yeah. You big dummy.
You idiot. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And to come full circle, there's yes. this writer, Joan Nathan, who knows all about Eastern European and Jewish food. She's mm-hmm. the expert on it.
Yeah.
And she says that there's 100 varieties of borscht.
I bet. After
yeah.
hearing what you just told me,
exactly.
brushing up on my history, I bet.
Yeah. And then she, even saying that, her next sentence blew my mind. She says that like a great summer appetizer is cold watermelon borscht.
Have you had watermelon like soup? Have you had
well,
it?
You like, just like blend it and right, call it soup.
That texture like really creeps me out.
Yeah, I can
I'm
understand
not,
that.
It's super grainy.
Yes, yes.
Like I hate shaved ice too for that
oh,
reason.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Beet and watermelon. I don't know how I feel about it. Well, I'll try anything once though.
But I don't even think she puts beet in the cold watermelon borscht.
Does she just consider it a type of borscht because it has watermelon in it?
Well,
like
yeah,
a soup,
exactly.
right? How you were mentioning. Yeah,
but this
okay.
is like, this is again why I'm like, borscht doesn't mean anything anymore.
Damn
and
it.
I bet that there's people who are going to be like, excuse
yeah,
you.
Watch your mouth.
You missed something huge. And fair, maybe I did. I'm just saying that like, anecdotally, mm-hmm. I think that you could call anything borscht.
That's really a way to dilute my culture. Not coming
no,
back.
I'm so rude to Eastern Europeans.
No, it's all good.
This is horrible.
We can like drink vodka together. We can make it up.
Okay.
We'll make up for,
okay.
it, for this.
Good. Good.
For this lapse in judgment.
Well, I hope you do forgive me.
No, absolutely. I forgive you.
Yeah. And of course, you know, the stuff isn't like changing the world. So if you want to disregard yeah. everything I just said, it's like, no, the only person who makes borscht is my mom and this is how it's done.
Yeah.
That's fine too.
Yeah, yeah.
Olivia, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Do you want people following you on social media?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's your Instagram account?
O Smoliga.
Mm-hmm.
First initial of my first name, uh-huh. my last name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. You have great. Like a lot of like, you don't just swim in pools. Sometimes you go to actual beaches.
I do sometimes go to beaches. If I get the chance, Georgia, I mean, it's not landlocked, but mm-hmm. Athens, maybe like a lake or something like that. Yeah. I got to look at the ocean here while I was here in LA.
Well, that's very LA to just look at it. I know. So you get the culture.
I get it. You guys just like surf and don't go to work, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm messing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.